And welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'm speaking with Gordon Chang, who's the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and The Coming Collapse of China. He's a writer, lawyer, and international policy analyst who joins us from the road as he heads to Washington, D.C., where he'll be testifying before Congress. Welcome to the program, Gordon Chang.
Thank you very much.
First of all, this visit with President Obama, which includes a dinner tonight and then a state dinner tomorrow night, there's no way in the world it could go worse than the last visit, right, with George W. Bush, where instead of a state dinner, they had a state lunch. When he was introduced, they played the Taiwanese national anthem. And then a protester from Falun Gong harangued Hu Jintao from the press pool. And then President Bush almost manhandled him. The whole thing, I think, was a disaster. And was it not seen in China, not as clumsy, but as a deliberate insult?
I think that many Chinese took the 2000 visit as a deliberate insult. And you're absolutely right that it couldn't have gone any worse. The other thing is that it couldn't have gone worse than the November 2009 summit, which also was a debacle in many respects. So the summits have not been really very good between the United States and China recently.
And when the Chinese leader says that the real importance of this visit is not so much to talk about revaluing the Chinese currency or the trade imbalance or human rights or Chinese military stance, but it's about harmony. Now, that sounds like a platitude, frankly.
Well, it is a little bit of a platitude. Harmony has special meaning for Hu Jintao. Because what he's been trying to do is to sort of avoid some of the social protests that have been occurring in China, and there very well may be more than 200,000 of them a year. And so the Chinese people have sort of made a joke of this word harmony, using the word harmonized as really a way of talking about repression. So I don't think we're going to hear too much in the way of harmony during this discussion in Washington. But nonetheless, clearly Hu Jintao wants harmony in China.
So that's the verb, I take it, has been used to describe websites that suddenly disappear as having been harmonized away. Is that?
Yes.
So
that is.
That's the Orwellian nature of it, right? So tell me, Gordon Chang, I understand that within the ruling circles, Hu Jintao is referred to as the African. Is that correct?
Yes, there has been those words. I mean, in any leadership, you're going to have some derogatory comments about the senior leaders. But I think Hu Jintao basically does have the respect of his colleagues among the Politburo Standing Committee members and among the Central Committee. He is the first among equals. He has some problems in the sense that the generals and the admirals seem to be taking some of his power away. And, of course, as he gets closer to 2012, when the fifth-generation leaders are supposed to take over, he is losing some power as sort of like the lame duck.
But, I mean, are we imposing our American political lens on China? A Chinese lame duck may not be the same as our lame duck, because I understand that Chinese politics are about consensus building and personal relationships. And the longer you're in power, the more you build these relationships. Therefore, it's not inconceivable that at the end of his tenure, he has more power than he had at the beginning.
Well, certainly in 2012, he will have more power than he did in 2002 when he took over. And you're absolutely right that there is no clear demarcation from one day you're president and the second day you're a private citizen. It doesn't work that way in the Chinese system. But nonetheless, leaders do lose power. And as people are starting to think about the political transition, I think they start to sort of avert their gaze from Hu and start thinking about Xi Jinping, who is supposed to be the next leader. So there is going to be this inevitable transition, and it's not going to help Hu Jintao that he's an outgoing leader.
Again, I'm speaking with Gordon Chang, the author of The Coming Collapse of China. We're talking about Hu Jintao's visit to Washington, D.C., And although he is often considered dull, he's a hydraulic engineer by training. I mentioned earlier the nickname the African is because he seems to have an affection for Africa and has traveled there quite a bit. And there's a lot of concern expressed often in the press about China's growing economic power and its search for resources as some kind of new form of resource colonialization, if you will. A lot of that is overstated, isn't it? I mean, you know, in Australia, they refer to Australia as China's quarry. And in Africa, there have been some protests about the Chinese management of mines, etc.
Well, China clearly does not believe in the spot market. It believes in direct ownership of assets. Essentially, though, Africa is not a new story because Mao Zedong, the first leader of the People's Republic, really did have an Africa focus himself. And that's because he saw that the Africans would be his allies and really the struggle with the Soviet Union for primacy among the communist bloc members. And so essentially China has had this Africa focus for a very long time. But now the focus is, as you point out, more on natural resources, on oils, on minerals, and that has got countries worried. I think that this is one area where we need to be probably less concerned than others. But there is one exception, and that is rare earths, where China basically cornered the market, now has about 98% of the production. They did that through predatory trade practices, and now they're trying to use their monopoly on rare earths to obtain geopolitical goals, and they do that in violation of their trade obligations. So with that exception, I think that, you know, I do agree with you that this is just normal competition.
As you mentioned earlier, Gordon Chang, that Hu may be overlooked or outflanked by some of his admirals and generals, he is nevertheless the chairman of the Central Military Commission. But there's been reports, I think mostly from our side, that the visit of Gates, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, that was upstaged by the flight test of this new jet stealth fighter, the J-20, it appeared that Hu Jintao was not informed of this in advance. If that's true, does that mean that the military in China has gone rogue?
Forgetting for the moment whether Hu Jintao knew about the flight test of the J-20 last week, it is clear that the generals and admirals are getting more power. There is remilitarization of Chinese politics and policy. This has been going on since the early part of, let's say, 2002, 2003. And it is very concerning because many of these flag officers and senior colonels do have pretty belligerent attitudes toward the rest of the world. Matter of fact, last February, we heard these comments in public about waging war on the United States. I think that's really the big story, that we see generals and admirals talking about matters that once were exclusively the province of civilian officials. So, yes, we need to be concerned about whether Hu Jintao knew or didn't know about the test of the J-20, but there is this bigger story that indeed these guys in the military are gaining much more influence.
But under Deng Xiaoping, did they not allow the military, because they were concerned about the military budget being onerous, to diversify and get into business? So isn't there this peculiar kind of schizophrenia in the military that they're both in business and in the business of the military at the same time? And I understand that the Yang family is a dominant force. Is that right?
Deng Xiaoping had basically a policy of four modernizations, and modernization of the military was one of the four, but it was the least important of them. And they did get into business, but Deng's successor, Jiang Zemin, started to get the military out of business. And although he hasn't been completely successful, I think that the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, is much more modern and is indeed giving up some of its business links. Now, unfortunately, it still has some important relations with defense, what would be defense contractors in our system, in their system, state enterprises in defense industries. And so the line is not so clear, especially with these big conglomerates. But as I said, this is not a story too much of China's military, whether they are in business or not. It's a question of how much influence they have on politics and policy.
But I understand, though, from reports following this flight of the Chinese stealth fighter, that on the internet, where you get a flavor of what's happening in China, particularly amongst the young, that they're not particularly happy with this kind of spending. And also, China's signals, I think, in a very fundamental way, with its strategic nuclear arsenal. It still has something like 25 strategic missiles, presumably pointed at the United States, and we and the Russians have thousands of them. So put that in perspective, if you will.
We don't know the number of warheads China has, but it's certainly more than 25. It's probably going to be in the 400 to 500 range, and that's enough to do a lot of damage to the United States.
Are they on strategic one or tactical, though? That's what I understand. There weren't that many on strategic missiles. There's a lot of tactical weapons, but not strategic ones.
Their strategic weapons are in the hundreds, and of course they do have tactical weapons as well. They are in the process of what's called MIRVing their rockets, which is put multiple warheads on them, and they are developing semi-capable submarines, which means that they can get very close to U.S. shores. So this is something that is important. It is something that we look at, of course. But yes, the United States has more warheads than China does. But you got to remember that with the START Treaty that was recently ratified, the United States is reducing its weapons, its strategic warheads, down to about 1,550. And that makes China's arsenal a factor. And China is not a part of the START arrangement, which means that China is going to become much more powerful in the sense of the warhead race when we start to look at the numbers.
Well, since you've written, Gordon Chang, the book The Coming Collapse of China, and recently the New York Times had a lead story about how we tend to exaggerate China's power and influence around the world, whereas the Chinese leaders are always looking over their shoulder and riding the tiger of internal dissent and changes within the country. Let me try and get a sense, just in closing then, about these two Chinas that appear to emerge, and that is the one that we're told has global military ambitions and is scouring the world for resources, and the other, a peaceful power whose industrious people are striving for their rightful place among nations. So is it one, the other, or both?
Well, China is a communist party, which can be a little bit nationalistic, and certainly, as we've seen, has a military which is extremely belligerent. And the Chinese people, on the other hand, who, as you are describing, you know, peaceful, they want to just have more say in their lives, they want to go about their business, and that's a very dynamic China. But it also makes it a very unstable China, where you have a people and their government essentially going in opposite directions. The Chinese people moving forward, the government becoming more repressive, more nationalistic, more belligerent. This is not a good combination for social stability or, for that matter, peace in Asia and the world. And that's the real concern.
Well, thank you very much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Gordon Chang.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Again, I was speaking with Gordon Chang, who's the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and The Coming Collapse of China. He's a writer, lawyer, and international policy analyst, and joins us from the road as he heads to Washington, D.C., where he will be testifying before the Congress. Let's now take a short break, and we'll return in a moment and talk with Amy Willens, who has just come back from Haiti. She'll be joining me here in the studio.